The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Hard to believe it's already Friday. What a fast-moving week this has been. And as I said yesterday, the news this week. We have lots of Bible study segments that are stacking up. We haven't gotten to as many this week as we would have liked. And it's because of the what's going on here in Europe, here in the UK now as well. We discussed the latest chapter yesterday on the program for Brexit. I think it was Richard who tweeted out or retweeted someone who said last night that he's enjoying this this latest episode of the UK as if it's a big reality show. It is in some ways carrying on like a soap opera. In any event, we will get back to our usual format as soon as we can, where half the show is made up of news, prophetically significant news events, and then half the show with Bible study as well. We certainly are focusing on plenty of scriptures, even with all of this going on in the world today. As we know, Jesus said to watch and pray always. And so we do have to watch world events, and with so many prophecies being fulfilled, it brings to mind a lot of scriptures. A third of the Bible is prophecy. And so when you see what's happening in the United States, when you see what's happening in the UK, when you see this divide between Europe and Ephraim and Manasseh, as you see it get bigger and bigger and bigger, you really see these last days prophecies being fulfilled. We know that the United States and Britain, they are the first target of this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And so when you see just how difficult it is now for Britain to extract itself out of the European Union, then you can just sense the the animosity that's building between the two sides. We're going to talk about that some later in this segment. The prophecies about the lovers of Ephraim and Manasseh being betrayed by our lovers. I think we're seeing some things happen this week that really are beginning to tell us or show us just how this is going to unfold. Well, Theresa May, she's fighting for her life politically. She gave a speech last night, and even before that, I mean, we talked about what was happening in real time yesterday on the program, and then following the contentious debate in the House of Commons that went on in the afternoon, you had quite a few politicians taking to the streets or getting in front of news cameras to plead their case. Rees-Mogg, we played a clip from him yesterday. He was the one who probably in the nicest possible way accused Theresa May of lying. And then yesterday he was explaining to reporters and to those watching that this is not what the people voted for.
Well, what has been achieved today is not Brexit.
It's not Brexit. It's not Brexit at all. And the Prime Minister can get up and say that it is. But as he said yesterday in the House of Commons, your words don't match your actions. You say one thing, but you're doing another thing. This is a little bit more from Rees-Mogg yesterday, clip 5.
The Conservative Party referendum, on which almost all Conservative MPs stood, said specifically that we would leave the customs union. It did not have any small print saying, oh, unless we decide to have a backstop that is a permanent customs union that is harder to leave than leaving the European Union under Article 50.
It just makes it even more difficult to make the break in its entirety. They voted clearly to leave that union. And all that they've done since, Theresa May's government, all that they've done have just made it it's just been more complicated. One last clip here, clip 7.
The law to leave has already been passed. The Withdrawal Act is through. But what we need is a leader who will say to the European Union, it is impossible to divide up the United Kingdom. It is impossible to agree to a situation where we have a perpetual customs union. It is impossible to pay £39 billion of taxpayers' money for a few promises, which was meant to be £39 billion for an implementation of a deal. And it is impossible for us to allow the continuing jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. That the problem is that the negotiations have given away on all the key points.
Too many concessions, he says there. So he went through some of the, hopefully you heard it in the midst of that siren, but he went through some of the details, some of the specifics. Article 7 in this deal, it says that all references to member states shall be understood as including the UK. So the UK is to be treated like an EU member state, which is exactly what the people voted to get out of. The language, though, the UK is to be treated as a member state. Richard was saying this morning as well that they'd be in this transition period. I mean, if this deal went through, they'd be in this this indefinite transition period into 20-whatever. And then you heard Rees-Mogg mention the $39 billion. I forget his first name, by the way. Mr. Rees-Mogg, I guess I should say. But he mentioned the $39 billion, and they really don't get much of anything in return. This is the EU, the demands that the EU is putting upon Britain. Well, this is what it's costing us, so you've got to pay us this $39 billion on the way out. And the British taxpayers are unhappy about that. Why should we have to pay just to leave this union? And then, of course, the issue with the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. Fraser Nelson, he said in the Telegraph today, perhaps the worst of it, this deal that is, the worst of it was the union. British negotiators picked up word that Martin Selmayr, the chief Brussels bureaucrat, had told his officials that the UK must pay a price for Brexit and that the price is Northern Ireland. He wanted the Brexit transition deal to be written in such a way that if the United Kingdom wanted to break free and strike a new arrangement, it would have no choice but to leave Northern Ireland behind. I mean, really, it ends up splitting the UK apart. And so that has a lot of Theresa May's detractors furious. We're just trying to get out of the European Union. And the way this deal is drawn up, it's going to break apart the United Kingdom. Well, Mr. Rees-Mogg, he mentioned the European Court of Justice as well. They can't get out from underneath that either. So Theresa May she comes forward last night and she's trying to hold it together. She's got quite a battle on her hands in the Conservative Party. Mr. Rees-Mogg, he submitted his letter last night, the no confidence letter, and all that they need is 48. I think Richard was saying he leads a group of something like 60 conservatives within the Conservative Party, Ms. May's coalition, something like 315 seats. So if they just get 48 to bring forward letters of no confidence, that would trigger a vote of confidence. And all that she would have to do is get a simple majority to stay in power. I think that amounts to about 158 seats. And a lot of times, if you know a third of your party isn't behind you, a lot of times a prime minister will just step down because she doesn't have or he doesn't have the majority of his party behind him, or in this case, behind her. But she's sounding like she's going to stay in, even if she gets a bare, simple majority. As if you don't get 158 votes to push me out, I'm staying in. She's pretty stubborn in her position. Here's what she had to say last evening, clip 1.
That is exactly what this agreement will deliver. Free movement ended. Vast annual payments stopped. the jurisdiction of the ECJ over, out of the CAP, out of the CFP. This is a Brexit that delivers on the priorities of the British people.
And really, a lot are saying today that's not true at all. This isn't what the people voted for. They've made lots of compromises, and she did acknowledge that last night, and she acknowledged the fact that she could understand why some people were angry. But going back to Fraser Nelson, this is from the Telegraph this morning. It says, the final withdrawal agreement confirms that Northern Ireland would stay in the EU's regulatory orbit, come what may. And then he goes through in quotes from Article 7, which I mentioned just a little bit ago. Here again is what the Prime Minister said last night, clip 2.
Yes, difficult and sometimes uncomfortable decisions have had to be made. I understand fully that there are some who are unhappy with those compromises. But this deal delivers what people voted for, and it is in the national interest.
And a lot of people in the press today are really upset because it's nothing like what the people assume they were voting for. Alison Pearson at the Telegraph, she had just a scathing rebuke after hearing the Prime Minister defend this deal, some 500 pages, I think it was. She said at the Telegraph, I actually felt cold fury as I read just one clause, which begins, for the purposes of this agreement, all references to member states in provisions of union law shall be understood as including the United Kingdom and its competent authorities, except as regards to decision-making. And Pearson says, there it is. There it is in black and white. The very thing the PM assures us is not happening. The UK will be regarded by the EU as a member state, because that is what, by law, we will be, only without any power. The eunuch in the room, in other words. She says, and the person who leads our country seriously believes this delivers the Brexit the British people voted for? It's simply staggering, she says further on. The PM who assured us in her stirring Lancaster House speech that no deal is better than a bad deal, had the effrontery to stand outside number 10 on Wednesday night and say, in effect, any deal is better than no deal. So that's where they are now. They're desperate to just get any deal, even if it meets every single one of Europe's demands. And so then she brings out what Jacob Rees-Mogg, Mr. Mogg, Rees-Mogg said yesterday, about how that her words, they don't match up with her actions. Over at The Spectator, Rod Little, he says, and so it was, well, he talks about the people's vote in 2016. He calls them the peasants, and how that the bureaucrats, the establishment, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, that they're not honoring the will of the populace, the ruling elites. They're just pressing ahead. His title is May's Deal Proves One Thing. The establishment always wins. Always wins. The majority that voted to leave, they're ignorant. They're racist. They're this. They're that. And we know better than them. We, the ruling elites. That's the gist of his piece at The Spectator. He says, what we voted for does not matter because they will not let it happen. We've endured 2 years of hysteria, bedwetting, and tantrums from our masters, our defeated masters. It says there have been threats, dire predictions, spiteful calumnies flung at those who dared to vote in a way with which they did not agree. Columnists suggesting that democracy has maybe gone too far. Shrieks of fury and temper strops, it says, continued attempts to use unelected bodies to overturn the vote. We've been told that we'll starve and we won't be able to fly anywhere and industrial production will cease. We've had big companies screaming they'll go out of business because they can't employ some benighted Romanian for 40 pence an hour. And on it goes. It says that May, later on, Theresa May, that she was a Remainer. I mean, she wanted to remain, and it was the same with David Cameron. And Jacob Rees-Mogg was saying yesterday, the problem here is that in her heart, I mean, she wanted to stay in Europe. She wanted to stay in the European Union. And so that's why she leans in that direction. She gets to the end of this deal, and she says, this is what the people wanted. But it really isn't. It's more in line with what she wants. It's more in line with what the elites want. As Rod Little says at The Spectator. And you keep coming back to what Mr. Armstrong said in 1973. I mean, how long ago was that? We're talking about 40-some years. 45 years or so. In the plain truth. He said, Britain is going to look back on January 1st, 1973, in all probability, as a most tragically historic date, a date fraught with ominous potentialities. It says, for that date marked the United Kingdom's entry into the European community, that then became the European Union. They're going to look back on this date as one that's tragically historic. It's a tragedy that we got in, and now look, they can't get out. Or if they do, it may be no deal at all. And we'll talk about what that might mean here in just a moment. But look at these ominous potentialities, to use those words that Mr. Armstrong used in 1973. Those potentialities are now realities. A tragically historic date. Every day now, we're seeing just how much Brexit is causing political chaos, division, financial uncertainty, growing social discord, all of it. This 45-year-old prophecy is just becoming more and more remarkable every day. And he was right, our booklet. It says, instead of looking to God, Britain is relying on its allies, it has that in quotes, like Europe, or as the Bible refers to them, as their lovers. They have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey alone by itself. It quotes Hosea 8 and verse 9. Ephraim has hired lovers. It says God never intended for Britain to join with Europe. Its ill-advised efforts to do so have revealed fatal weakness and lack of trust in the source of its national greatness. At the same time, they have portended the downfall of the country. 1973, some of those first quotes, and of course, even earlier than that, when it talked about Britain not being a part of the European Union. Rod Little says, May's deal proves one thing, the establishment always wins. Well, in the end, we know that Britain's going to be on the outside looking in. Whether they're finally booted out, whether they walk away with no deal, however it happens, we know where this is leading. Yet at the same time, Little brings up a good point. It shows just how these bureaucrats think. Once they're in power, they think they know more. You see the same thing in the United States. Every day we see President Trump. One anomaly, but you see President Trump fighting against this deep state, fighting against the media, fighting against the Democrats, fighting against even many in his own party. And that's what you see here in the UK, the Conservative Party. That party's divided. Some want to remain, some want another vote. And others say, look, we already voted. We want out. Let's move on. In America, there's this Federalist piece by Adam Mill about this double standard that you see with respect to recusals. Donald Trump, as you know, he appointed, forget his first name as well, the Whitaker replacement for Jeff Sessions to be the Attorney General until another one is confirmed by the Senate. And so he comes in, or he's about to come in, and of course, all the Democrats are out there screaming that he's got to immediately recuse himself because he might come in and really tighten the screws on the Mueller investigation and actually keep the investigation focused on what it was supposed to focus on from the very beginning. Russian collusion, remember? So the Democrats scream that, hey, he needs to recuse himself. They want Rosenstein to stay in charge or to be the supervisor over Mueller because he's letting everything go. Adam Mills says here, in case you're wondering how the recusal rules work, it's simply a matter of whether it helps or hurts President Trump. Don't believe me? See if you can detect a pattern. Since Whitaker might rein in the special counsel, he must be recused, they argue. Similarly, when it appeared former Attorney General Jeff Sessions might help Trump, he acceded to demands to recuse himself. But Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is a proven thorn in the president's side with an obvious conflict of interest, so no demands for recusal there. It's the Republicans, or the ones that are more supportive of the president. They have to recuse themselves. You don't really hear much from Democrats recusing themselves. He says further, Judge Rudy Contreras' friendship with disgraced FBI agent Peter Strzok and lawyer Lisa Page, at the same time he was reviewing Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant applications from Strzok, did not require recusal from considering the application. He was a buddy with Strzok, Peter Strzok, and he was issuing these FISA warrants so that they could spy on the Trump administration. No recusal there. No conflict of interest there. Just business as usual. See, the Democrats fancy themselves as being above the fray. They're objective. No matter the circumstances, they're always going to be objective. It's those dirty Republicans you can't trust. They've got to recuse themselves. They have conflicts of interest. It says the recusal pundits called for the recusal of newly confirmed Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh because he might side with the president in future cases. Yet when Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg calls Trump a faker and openly expresses dismay at the prospect of his presidency, she did not recuse. She doesn't need to recuse. She should stay in there. She's got to resist. It's all about the resistance. It's all about fighting Donald Trump. He says further on in his piece, this is at the Federalist, forcing Whitaker to recuse himself from the Robert Mueller probe would protect it by restoring oversight responsibility to Rosenstein. That's what the Democrats want. They want this investigation to continue. It's a never-ending investigation, and it just gets wider and wider and wider. It says 0% of Mueller's indictments and convictions fall within the mandate of investigating links between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. 0%. In other words, they found nothing. It's just a big hoax, like my father wrote in the Saving America article earlier this year. 0%. But, it says, the investigation did succeed in one important goal of its proponents, to delay and frustrate House oversight into the Justice Department and FBI's interference in the 2016 elections until after the Democrats could retake the House. That's an important angle to this story. The fact that this investigation, this ongoing, never-ending investigation, it was meant to delay, to frustrate the House oversight until the Democrats could regain control of the House and put an end to all of these investigations, into the illegal spying, into the Hillary campaign's collusion with Russia, the Russian dossier, all of this, the FISA warrants, everything. As it is, I mean, because of the House committee, led by Republicans, at least for the first couple of years of this presidency, they were able to uncover quite a lot. And there's been several books that have been written about this hoax. And it goes on and gives quite a few examples. But just the last part of this article from the Federalist, it says, it's extremely bad for a democracy to criminalize political differences. This is a favorite tool of dictatorships. that pretend to be democracies but use the criminal justice system to neutralize their political opposition. They're out there crying and crying and crying out for democracy. Every vote counts. But in the final analysis, you see these entrenched bureaucrats who, when they have opportunity to do so, will impose their will on the majority. Further on, it says, unfortunately, prosecution of political opponents is becoming more common in America as prosecutors seek to interfere with or reverse election results. We see that happening all over the place. Look at the circus in Florida. They went through a machine recount, and then now they've got to go through and count it out by hand because the Democrats are doing everything that they can. They're desperate to overturn that Senate race. And even the governor, I think the governor in the second recount actually lost votes, but he still hasn't conceded, Gillum. He's still looking for any and every way that he might be able to sneak in there, even if it's illegal. And same with that Senate race. Rick Scott and Nelson, I think his name is. But you might have heard about this Broward County election official. She turned in her recount totals just 2 minutes after the deadline so that they wouldn't count, because the recount turned up something like 800 more votes for Rick Scott, the Republican. So here's this woman who brags about how she always obeys the rules. She follows all the rules precisely, which she doesn't. And there's no reason why she should still be in the position that she's in. But look, there's a lot at stake here. The way the Democrats look at it, and if we can overturn a few of these seats, if we can overturn this Senate seat, that gives us more power. What did my father say in Saving America? We're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and to stay in power. They believe they're above the law. How much cheating actually goes on? This will be fascinating to find out in the world tomorrow when it's finally and fully exposed. Some of it gets exposed even now. There's a few, like the president and Marco Rubio, that are fighting back, saying, look, there's fraud here. And, of course, to even sound the alarm, well, listen to this exchange. This is from, if I can find it in my notes here, it's from MSNBC last night, in response to those that would question what's happening in Florida with this recount, and then now another one by hand. This is clip 4.
Every time the president goes and talks about election fraud, which is not happening in Florida or anywhere, he's actually chipping away at democracy,
right,
and at Americans' faith in democracy. And that's extremely dangerous. And it continues. I don't find it funny. I don't think anyone should find it funny. And I really don't want to sound alarmist when I say this, but I don't believe it to be alarmist. It's fascist politics.
You're a fascist if you even question it. There is nothing inappropriate happening here. There's no fraud here or anywhere. That's what she said. It never happens. There's a long history of it happening in Florida, in Illinois. Look at the year 2000. Look at what they tried to do to steal the election away from George W. Bush. It had to go all the way up to the Supreme Court because the Democrats had too much control in the judiciary in Florida. And so finally, the Supreme Court settles it. And Democrats to this day will say, we were cheated. We were cheated. Every vote wasn't counted. And you saw the spectacle, some of you, if you're old enough, holding up these ballots, looking for these hanging chads. And that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to reread these ballots that are unclear or people that didn't follow instructions, trying to discern which way they voted. And of course, you get counties like Miami-Dade or Broward County where they're heavily Democrat, and then all of the election officials are Democrat for the most part, like this woman. And we're supposed to think there's no fraud, nothing inappropriate going on? Or do we even question it? You're a fascist? We're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do. Look at how they're treating President Trump. You don't think they'd turn a few extra votes in out of nowhere from some dark closet somewhere? Provisional ballots. Oh, okay. They keep trickling in, and for some reason, they always, always, always favor the Democrats. How about that? Have you ever seen or heard of an election being overturned in favor of a Republican? Well, we got these extra votes we just found. This is in the United States of America. The every vote counts. Every voice matters. Except when it's razor thin and we can possibly tilt the scales in our favor if a few extras just show up out of nowhere. Florida orders first ever statewide hand recounts as legal fights continue. It says the order gives canvassing boards in the state's 67 counties 3 days to pore over thousands of ballots that were rejected by machines because of overvotes. A voter appears to have chosen more than one candidate in a race, or undervotes, in which a voter appears to have skipped a race altogether. With the help of state guidelines, the canvassing boards, which are allowed to enlist the help of volunteers, they'll try to determine how these voters intended to vote. So they're going to get some volunteers to try to figure this out. What does this ballot mean? How did this individual vote? They just need a few thousand more, and they could possibly turn that Senate seat to the Democrats. You see what's happening here. Anyone with eyes to see can see what's happening here. We're getting a hard look. A hard look at what they're willing to do to stay in power. My father said in that article, had Hillary Clinton been elected, the destructive trends that unfolded during the Obama presidency would have continued unchecked. And they surely would have intensified. Many people, including me, believe it would have meant an end to our constitutional republic. So you go back to that headline from Rob Little, well, Rod Little at The Spectator. May's deal proves one thing. The establishment always wins. And the establishment in the United States, they're continuing to rack up quite a few victories as well. But as I say, the one exception is Jeroboam. God cleared the way for him. And he's been exposing the radical left. He's been exposing the deep state. He's been exposing the evil activities of these entrenched bureaucrats. But look at what he's going up against. Look at the UK. Here the people gave a very clear, their voice was heard in 2016. Clearly, this is what we want. We want to break away. We want our sovereignty back. We don't want the European Commission deciding this or that for us. We don't want to submit to all of these European regulations. We certainly don't want some European court deciding matters that are distinctly British. And look at how hard it is just to pull out of it because of leaders that just basically say one thing and do another because they know. They know. Well, you step back and look at the bigger picture. With Brexit in particular, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, he had a fascinating piece yesterday about how this impacts Europe. If this were to fall through, if there's no deal, as I read to you earlier, there's all kinds of reports and columns, and we've heard it for 2 years. If you do this, if we leave, it's going to do this. It's going to be a tragedy. And then the others that say, no, it won't. Everything's fine. Let's just get out. But Ambrose Evans-Pritchard says that if this deal falls through or if there's no deal, the impact that this could have on Europe, because there are some significant connections between Europe and Britain, certainly when you look at it economically and with respect to trade. Let me just see if I can find the relevant quotes. He says here, it binds the UK to all existing and future EU law on state aid and competition. Well, further on, it says Bruno Le Maire, France's finance minister, he was the one that called for the European, I think the European Empire earlier this week. But he says that the euro is dangerously vulnerable to the next global downturn. It cannot endure without an EU treasury and an apparatus of fiscal federalism. Either we get a eurozone budget, this is France's finance minister, either we get a eurozone budget or there will be eventually no euro at all. And then at the end of his article, here's what Ambrose Evans Pritchard says. My view is that the financial shock of a no-deal Brexit would crystallize mounting risks and hurl the eurozone into an existential crisis. Now think about what Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, and my father have been saying for decades now. It's going to be triggered, the formation of this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. It'll be triggered by an economic crisis. And so what about the financial shock of a no-deal Brexit? Pritchard says, academic trade models do not capture the multiple channels of contagion obvious to any Mayfair hedge fund dealing with capital flows. Some 80% of Europe's capital markets are in London. So here's where it's all intertwined. And it is. It's not like it's easy to make a clean break here. He's just saying, okay, if this deal doesn't go through, and if it turns out that Britain just has to walk away, how does that impact Britain? Okay, you can ask that, but how does that impact Europe? He says, Britons have been told for 2 years that a no-deal Brexit would bring the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as well it might, but the European public has not been alerted to the big risks they face in any comparable way. He goes on to say that just the lack of concern on this is astonishing. And he says that, you know, if this were to happen, if it triggers an economic crisis, you could see groups like the AFD, these far right groups in Europe, gain even more power. But what I want you to think about is that prophecy. Actually, there's multiple prophecies about us trusting in our lovers and then the double cross. Read about it. Ezekiel 23. Jeremiah 30 says, all your lovers have forgotten you. They seek you not. So what we're seeing this week, we saw it with the comments from the French president on Sunday, then the finance minister on Monday, Angela Merkel on Tuesday. We need an army. We need an empire. And now look at how difficult this Brexit negotiation is. It's a nightmare for Britain. And the animosity is building between these two, Europe and Britain. And if in the end, whatever break it is, and it's going to be a break, we know that from prophecy. But do you suppose it's going to make the leaders in Brussels happy? Do you suppose it's going to make Germany happy? Germany sells 750,000 cars every year in the UK. 750,000. So what happens when, and of course that brings up trade wars. That's prophesied too. He brings up some fascinating points. Ambrose Evans Pritchard. We go to the Assyrian, like Hosea 5 says. We go to the Assyrian to try to fix our problems, our sicknesses, our diseases. And in the end, Assyria turns on us. Jerusalem's the powder keg. Armies will surround Jerusalem. And then the next step is the start of World War III, which is an attack on the United States and Britain. In Ezekiel, the end time prophet, my father says, Ezekiel 23 explains this heinous double cross. Israel is represented by Aholah and Judah. Aholibah, Israel, that's mainly the U.S. and Britain, and Judah become lovers to the Assyrians, today's Germans. God then delivers Israel and Judah into the hands of the Germans. Now, I want to take you back and keep in mind that as you listen to this, this is my father's Key of David program from 2011. He's writing this, or rather saying this, something like 5 years before the Brexit vote, 5 years before the people of Britain said, we want out. Listen to what my father said in this Key of David program, clip 8.
In 1978, in The Incredible Human Potential, Mr. Armstrong said again, Britain will not be in that empire soon to come. And he said the same thing in 1985 in Mystery of the Ages. And in a co-worker letter, he wrote this, June 10, 1980, 9 years before the Berlin Wall fell. Here's what he wrote. It now looks entirely feasible that Yugoslavia may be included in this revived Roman Empire. All the Pope's native Poland and Romania and possibly Hungary. Add Austria, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and France. There will be a union of 10 nations in the general area of the medieval Roman Empire in the new United Europe. Probably Holland, Denmark, Norway, and Sweden will not be included, but Ireland may. Britain will not. That is just amazing. And he says that all this weakness in the past that the Germans have had, they're going to blame on Britain and America. They're going to blame it on us. And they're going to blame these financial problems that we're having, that they're having over there in Europe on the U.S. And frankly, we are responsible for some of them.
Notice that last part there in particular. They're going to blame... They're going to blame the weakness, particularly with respect to the economy, their financial problems. They're going to blame it on us. They will blame it on the United States. They will blame it on Great Britain. That's why we're looking at these negotiations. It's dividing Britain, for sure. But what about the divide between Britain and Europe? They're going to have some... They're going to have some excuses to put all of the blame on those British people. Well, they did this to us. They ruined our economy. Look at the way they got out of the Union. Look at how they undermined our efforts. We know there's going to be dramatic changes even before World War III. We know they're going to be downsizing to 10 nations. So there are dramatic changes coming. There's problems with the euro. There's problems with Italy's finances. And so after it's dramatically downsized, after it's relaunched, they'll see Britain, they'll see the United States as enemy number one, as the prime target. My father writes in this is in Brad McDonald's article, or booklet, The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy. It says, God also discusses this German-led Catholic Holy Roman Empire in the book of Ezekiel. He's referring to Ezekiel 23 as well. He says, the prophet describes a scenario where Britain and America are doting on her lovers, on the Assyrians, her neighbors. Britain, the U.S., and the Jewish state draw close to Assyria. They draw especially close, but then there is the double cross. You think about that clip we played from Tuesday, Mr. Armstrong saying that this Frankenstein monster is going to come back on us. This is clip 9.
Just look into past history. You see if we're going to gain anything by trying to build up the United States of Europe. You see if we're not building a Frankenstein that's going to turn on us and destroy us. Most of you will live to see it. You remember that I told you and that I spoke by the authority of Jesus Christ.
Well, we will remember, some of us. There should be a lot more, but we'll remember what he said there. We're seeing it. Look at past history. Look at what we've done. Look at what we did following the conclusion to World War II, the finish there, since that time, since 1945. Building up this empire, providing it with all the security and the protection that it needed for decades. And now, I mean, it's fully formed. It just needs the army. And you certainly see the signs of that betrayal, that double cross, all around. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude this program. We'll conclude this week with a few emails that have come in recent days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Holy Roman Empire has made pivotal and defining contributions to Western civilization. But its many reincarnations have also come with painful and catastrophic consequences. European leaders aim to unite the fractured continent of Europe by reviving the legacy of this extraordinary church-state combine. One of the great lessons of this empire is that it always comes back. There is always another resurrection. To understand much more on this vital subject, call now and request our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. The Holy Roman Empire is not just a relic of history. It is about to play a central role in world events. Coming to understand about the nature and character of this powerful institution tells you as much about the future as it does about the past. As part of this free offer, also request Herbert Armstrong's classic work, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? Both booklets are available at no cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free book, you may also request a free subscription to our monthly news magazine, The Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet examines world events under the clear light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it, because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming.
The Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
A few emails that continue to come in from earlier this week. This one here says, when I first heard the words of the French president, I must say it stunned me a bit. But then after the initial surprise wore off, it was prophecy coming to life. Prophecy that, as you said, Mr. Armstrong, all along with your father has been speaking so many times before. He writes that he tries to keep up with the news as much as possible, and then says, things are happening at such a rapid pace now that one can scarcely catch his breath before the next live and breaking news event has happened. Frankly, I'm a bit behind and scrambling to catch up. Thank you to you and your staff and the work that you're doing in keeping us informed of all of these major prophecies coming to pass. God bless you and your staff for all the effort that goes into the website, the videos, the radio programs, the PACs, the literature that you produce. It says, I'm very grateful to God and to you for all of it. Further on, it says, it comments on the forthcoming Thanksgiving holiday in America. That's next Thursday, and just how much we have to be thankful for. This one here regarding the trumpet brief, I think this was Richard Palmer's from Tuesday or Wednesday, about Germany invading Norway again. It says, wow, I'm really just blown away. This time Germany is going to have a European army under the Roman Catholic Church, and they are aggressive in their actions. It says Mr. Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg is most probably going to flatter his way into office, and that could lead to the Holy Roman Empire. This needs to get around the world, it says. Best short read ever. So some nice encouragement there to Richard for that trumpet brief from earlier in the week. Another one says, as soon as they mention European army, Mr. Armstrong's name jumps right out there. Events now unfolding really help people point back to the Elijah work and to God. Thanks for keeping us educated. Yes, you wonder just how much what Mr. Armstrong would be saying and how loudly he'd be proclaiming this if he was witnessing some of the things that we've seen even just this week. Another one here says, this is plain and simply a direct slap in the face of not only President Trump, but also of the United States of America. That's talking about the comments from the French president. It says, the America that helped save them from Germany in two world wars, it really is a window into the heart of France. Another one writes from Ohio. This is a woman who listens in from Ohio, says, thank you for the daily radio show. I may be days behind you, but I don't miss a show. She uses SoundCloud to listen in, and then she says something about clicking a little heart so that it shows that she watched it, she enjoyed it, she liked it, I guess. I haven't been on SoundCloud in a while, so I don't know all the little tidbits there. But it says, in your follow-up regarding the London Pact, you mentioned that the world wants prophecy but don't necessarily want to change. I attended the Columbus Pact and saw that while helping at the literature table. The books with prophecy and in their titles were requested repeatedly. I also heard your father in the lecture portion trying to get through to the people about the need to change. I hope this note finds you well and full of energy to keep up with the work of God. Another one has a similar response. This one comes from Canada. It says, first of all, let me thank you for all of your hard work, yours and those working behind the scenes to bring us all of these programs. It is mind-boggling the rate at which things are coalescing in Europe of late. It's hard to believe. I've been waiting for this for over 30 years and many more in God's church for even longer. At the same time this is happening, we see Britain being pummeled in the Brexit debacle. What a time to be alive. At the same time, it makes one stoop with heaviness, knowing the greatest time of suffering ever is about to engulf our countrymen. This is made especially poignant hearing about the decline in numbers in the follow-up Bible study after our pastor general's latest pack in Ohio. That really does illustrate Ezekiel 33 and verse 32, as you have pointed out. That's the prophecy that talks about those who love to hear the message, but they won't do it. They won't put it into practice. This one here comes from New Zealand. It says, Brad McDonald said in a tweet this week that he thought that world events had gone to the next level. I would have to agree, especially when you read about a woman who is in the process of becoming a man who put their transition on hold so they could get pregnant and have a child before completing the transition and is looking forward to chest feeding because they have had a double mastectomy. Well, there's things there I can't even quite follow. But what a sick and perverse world we live in. And he brings this out. What a world this poor child is going to be born into. A mother who will be its father and yet doesn't identify as male or female. Just truly bizarre. And one last one, this one also from New Zealand. It says, I was fascinated to hear you read about Proverbs 25 verses 4 and 5 from A Word from the Wise. And then he asks for some of the information regarding that book, which we sent to him. It says, and thanks for another great program today. World events about the formation of the Euro beast power are certainly speeding along at present. And thank you for a unique radio program where you provide us daily this fascinating mix of world news and Bible instruction like no one else on earth. Keep up the excellent work. Well, that's all that we have for today's show. We thank you, as always, for joining us today, for joining us all through this exciting week. Hopefully, you'll have a nice Sabbath, and we'll look forward to seeing you again on Monday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.